college age, high school age is across the hall, and in middle school is on this side about two doors up.
He just graduated high school.
He's coming here for one. It's about decision making, and tonight will be about consequences of decision making. So, come on in here. Chloe just graduated, but she's out of town, or else she would be
That's
in here.
That's Chloe's dad.
You come on in here for one.
We're
going to have a variety of ages in here, so anybody can come in. Well, Johnny said he was coming in here.
So you can get John for that variety.
John for a variety of ages.
Got
our 20, oh, my bad, that's bad, bro.
Got our 20-somethings, we got our 30-somethings, we got our 40-somethings, we need John.
We got 30-something in here. There he is.
What?
I need you to finish the demographics.
Tower right now.
We need a female. I mean,
Shots fired, right?
Oh.
Come on, fun games. All right.
Since last week,
is it really all guys?
That's all guys.
We had one college student. I saw her go down that hallway going to Eric's class, okay. So I scared off the last one, I guess.
Gotcha.
All right, so for the new ones in here, this is a class about decisions, Bible or biblical, making biblical decisions. I'll put it that way. There we go. Last week, for the ones that weren't here, we talked about, we did a timeline, and I asked at the beginning of the class, you know, what decisions do you think are the most important in life? And we listed them up here, and I drew my, and we got all kinds of stuff. I drew my timeline up here of when I made those decisions. My point in doing that, I don't think I mentioned this last week for the ones that are in here, was the fact that with this being, you know, mainly younger people in here, mainly, excluding myself, you'd be in that age group of when I made the most impactful decisions in my life. And so, you know, I wanted to start off with that because, like, the one thing I remember saying this was, I can go back to one decision, one point in my life, and say from that point forward, everything is built on that one decision. And that was when I decided to go in the Air Force. Everything from there stemmed from that. And I told Kim that, I said, you know, I was telling her about the class. I told her, she goes, oh, well, thanks. The most important decision in your life was the Air Force. It wasn't me. I was like, well, you got to understand. Without going in the Air Force, there might not have been a me and you. So therefore, yes, everything stems from that one decision. So, you know, when we get going here, man, I'm asking you guys your take on that too. So if you would, let's go ahead and start off with word prayer. It's about it. Our Father in heaven, we come to you at this time thanking you for all that you blessed us with. We thank you for this opportunity we get to study your word. We ask as we discuss these things tonight that you'll help us to understand how to make better decisions and how to deal with the consequences from those decisions. We ask that you'll go with us in this life and help us to understand our daily walk better, to be a light that shines your word. We ask that you'll forgive us of our sins. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. And then the cord comes in. How's it going? Hey, do you care to lead us off the word of prayer?
Sure.
Sorry. So we got to redo it since you came in later. All right. So, as anybody at this point in their lives, can you look back and say, that was the most impactful decision I made that's led me down X, Y, Z? What is it, Cameron?
I'm going to laugh at joining Boy Scouts. So currently I have my first major internship in my career path.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my Eagle Scout project that I did, working at the same place that I did it for. The reason I got my driver's license so late is because of Boy Scouts, because another member of my troop died in a car wreck the month I got my driver's permit. And then, let me think about what else. Oh, found out I like public speaking because I did that.
So everything, you can go back to your days of joining Boy Scouts and say everything from there forward, and you're going to find out later in life, all of that is going to be impacted from that one decision. So, I mean, that's why this class is so important. Whenever I say that, you know, I said the other night, I felt like I wanted to teach this class because I felt like the farmer's insurance guy. You know, I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two. I didn't want to teach this class because I've made great decisions. I wanted to teach this class because I've made bad decisions. I think those are the ones that I've learned the absolute most from. You know, the ones that I've made great decisions, later on in life, I'm like, hey, that worked out pretty good in my favor. But the ones where I made bad decisions, that's the ones where I really grew as an adult, as a Christian, a husband, father. So the class introduction, like I said, we're doing this tonight will be consequences of decision making. So in looking at this, one of the things, before we go further, let me back up just a minute. You said you could pinpoint one decision that's affected your life so far. One of the other things I want to do on Wednesday nights in here is just ask, is there anybody that has a decision that they're making now or have made or that is looming near that you'd like to discuss about those decision-making process? Anyone? What is it, McCord? I know you got one.
I've recently tried to make the most use of my time, like trying to kind of stay on track and be productive every chance I can get.
And that's going to be one of our classes and one of the case studies we're going to talk about is, you know, leisure time. You know, what do you do with your leisure time? How is that productive? And I was listening to one guy that was talking about in this little video I was watching. He said, you know, when it comes to your time, what are you doing with it? You know, if you got time to be on social media, then you've got time to be doing something else. You know, and I got to think about something, you know, that's right. How much time do I spend on social media when I could be up doing little things? You know, cleaning the house, mowing the yard, playing with my kids. You know, and I know they're older, but, you know, last night, me and Gary and John went and played, I don't know how many holes of golf we played. You know, that was a great time to just spend with somebody else, you know, and get out away from unplugging, just getting away from it all. So that was fun. So yeah, you know, better use of your time. That's a big decision. Anybody else got anything coming up? Anybody maybe getting married? Maybe, you know, that's a big decision going on there. We're going to talk about that in more than one class because one of the things that always amazes me is the fact that a woman will attach herself to a man and say, I'm going to follow this guy for the rest of my life. That is a major decision. And I think us guys overlook that sometimes as a responsibility that goes along with that. That, hey, this lady has chosen to be a part of me and take my name, and, you know, here we are, the rest of our lives together is what we're looking at. So that's a major decision. And so you got to look at it from their standpoint. It's a big one. So consequences of decision making. There's three of them that I came up with when I was thinking about this. And it's kind of odd to say there's three, the positive, negative, and neutral. Because when we hear consequences, what's the first thing you think of? The negative aspect, right? So when I did this slide, I was thinking, you know, positive consequences. That's kind of like an oxymoron. It just doesn't sound right. You know, most of the time you think about it as a positive consequence is what? A reward. It's an accomplishment. You know, we don't think about it as a consequence when it has a positive outcome. And so when I was thinking about this, you know, how do we look at things when we think of consequences? Well, first, what if that seed, you go back to the slide before this, that seed is buried, and then what happens? Hey, it's actually dead until it's buried, right? And then it grows from there. So where are you at in your life when you do things and you're under pressure? Do you see yourself as being buried with no hope? Or do you see yourself as having an opportunity to do something good out of the next decision that you make? So the seed is buried. How are you going to perform? There's some verses, and I want you guys to kind of come up with some on your own too. Tell me what you can come up with. And when we look at these, I was thinking, you know, how can we go about making sure that we get a positive outcome from any decisions that we make? First thing that comes to mind is Proverbs. There's one, I can't think of which one it is, actually. I'm starting off in Proverbs, where it says that the wise man surrounds himself with counsel, like many people. What do you do whenever you go to make a decision, a major decision? You just say, I'm going to Google that. I'm going to watch TV, see what the biggest sports star and a songwriter and, you know, and singer, whatever actor tells me I should do.
Yeah, ask someone you're close to.
Ask someone that you're close to, somebody you trust. I mean, John and Gary's gotten phone calls from me about stuff, and they're probably sitting there scratching their head going, why is he asking me advice on this, you know? Well, that's because I trust their counsel on things. I call my brothers all the time if I'm getting ready to do something. I may already have an answer to what I'm going to do. You know, I'll call them and say, hey, what's your thoughts on this? What do you think about this? I don't trust going to the internet because you can find a lot of answers on the internet. But what we found out here recently over the past, 10 years, is that the internet can be swayed very easily to, you know, What do we want your thoughts to be on this? If you're going to buy a product and you say, how good is this product? What do they say? Well, you get to look at it. It's, oh, this is great. This is great. I don't look for the 5-star reviews. I look for the 1-star reviews because that's the guy that I want to know what happened. So you look for positive consequences. First thing I want to do in order to make sure I make a good decision is get counsel. Go to Proverbs 4 with me. Proverbs chapter 4. And I'll tell you one of the things that I've been doing. I've got a 30-minute drive to work and a 30-minute drive home from work every day. What I like to do now, if I'm not talking to somebody on the phone, especially in the mornings, so nobody's awake when I'm going to work, I'll turn on my Bible app and hit the play button, and I'll just listen to whatever I want. What verse am I thinking of today? What am I wanting to hear from? I want to hear something from Paul. I want to hear some Proverbs, and I'll turn it on and listen for 20, 30 minutes to something that I can find. So Proverbs is always a great one to me. Proverbs chapter 4. Hear, O sons, thy father's instruction, and be attentive, that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words and keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get insight, do not forget, and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. So I've got the whole chapter there, and I've gone through and read it. And I mean, it's, the thing about Proverbs, it tends to repeat itself a lot. But as I was reading that first 6 verses, I was like, man, that's awesome. How do I get good insight in order to have a positive outcome? How do I do that?
Yeah. Look to the experts in the area. And I mean, the Bible's never not going to be an expert about it.
Yeah. So whenever I see this, I start reading, I'm like, all right, so we got a positive outcome. Who do I get it from? I get wisdom, get insight, do not forget, do not turn away from my words of my mouth. I mean, one of the worst things that can happen is whenever you guys get to your age and you automatically think, I can vote, I can do these things, I can do whatever. My parents are now idiots and I know what to do and I don't need their help anymore. And I can tell you that, John can tell you that, Gary can tell you that, that's what's probably going to go through your mind one of these days. I don't need their advice anymore. I'm going to find my own way. I'm going to do my own thing. You just graduated from high school. My daughter did too. And I'm going to tell you, at times I think she may be the smartest person in the world if you just listen to her. She doesn't need our insights at times. Gary, you've been through that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you want to tell them, look, listen to the words I'm saying. And it's coming straight from Proverbs here. That's where we get our wisdom is, we look at this and we say, hey, it makes sense. Even at my age today, I'm 45 and I turn 46, I still seek advice. And especially from those that have been through it, once or twice. I don't ask somebody that has never been through it in order to find out what I should do. That doesn't make sense, does it? All right.
Joey, I think verse 4 is really important, where it says, let your heart hold fast my words. One of the things going into everything is having an open heart about it, and not, kind of like what you talked about, not letting yourself think you know everything. I mean, anybody that's been married, has started a marriage, knows that, I don't wonder, but when I got married, I thought I knew everything, and, buddy, it caused so much strife between me and her and it probably took 8-9 years for me to realize, okay, shut up. Listen to her. She may know what she's talking about too.
Yeah.
And sometimes the greatest thing you have is that, somebody that can kind of put you in your place, which is what I needed. So but you gotta have an open heart to do that. So I just thought that was
humility is great in any type of relationship, especially in marriage. To have a positive outcome, positive consequences from situations, sometimes you need to say, I was wrong and I'm sorry. All right, that goes a long way. I don't know how many times Kim and I have started arguing over something and I've been like, I don't even make sense to myself right now. Let's just stop right here. I'm sorry. Let's go change this. Because one of the things, we might get to this a little bit later, but I'll go ahead and say that. One of the things I've found, it hits me harder every day, the older and grayer I get, we've got a limited time on this earth, right? And the last thing I want to do is waste any second of any day with petty stuff. the negative consequences of a life like that is so stupid. And so, I mean, make sure that, you know, you're willing to have that humility that it takes to make sure that that relationship stays right. The positive consequences of saying I'm sorry, like John said, just shutting your mouth sometimes, seeking that advice, you know, that's when, you know, you got to look to what the Bible says. And what does it say? Seek counsel. When we go into that marriage relationship, what does it say about the man and woman? To leave their mother and father, be joined together. All right, some of the biggest problems there is, some of them where you get the most negative consequences is when one of the two doesn't leave mom and dad and become one. And when you become one, that doesn't mean, like John says, the guy knows everything. A lot of times we need to just, you know, like they were saying, you got one of these and two of these for a reason. You know,
well, the example I always used between me and her was anytime she'd come home from work and something would happen at work that would upset her. Well, me as the guy would always try to fix it. And there was one time she was talking and I was trying to whatever, and she looked at me and goes, be quiet. She goes, you don't have to try to fix everything. Sometimes I just want to rant and be done with it. And so now I just said, she starts ranting. So
for you guys that haven't been married yet, you will hear that same exact conversation that one in your life.
I've been married 34 years. We had that discussion this week.
Yep.
Amy came home upset about something at work. Mr. Fix-It here said, I would just, and she said, nope. She said, don't try and fix it. I don't want you to fix it. I just want to vent.
Which initially led me to think, well, then why are you telling me that? But I learned to be quiet.
You tell us all guys are here for.
Yeah.
The positive outcome of keeping your mouth shut at times, you know, and Proverbs teaches us that. Proverbs tells us at times, you know, a fool is known by his many words. How many times has that been true?
You know, we've got a unique opportunity in here tonight. It's all guys. And the three of us have been married a long time, and we've kind of been through some things. Man, tonight would be a great time for you young guys that aren't married. You've been married how long?
2 years.
I mean, you're still in that honeymoon phase.
Look at him. He's feeling it. But yeah, it's, and once again, this class, guys, don't let me be sitting here and lecture you guys the whole time. You know, make sure you guys chime in if you got any questions, any discussion on any of this stuff. It doesn't have to be about marriage, because we're going to have a marriage class later on. But, you know, the positive outcomes or the positive consequences, like I said, that's something that, what is your reward going to be? Living a godly life is going to give you a positive consequence, right? Last night on the way home from golfing, we was talking, Kate and I was talking, and Wes is doing a really good thing with the high school class right now. He started a group chat. He said once a day, something each one of you take a day, and just text the group a Bible verse that is really meaning something to you and why. And so Kate and I was talking about this, and I said, you know, you need to understand why this means something to you. I can, through God that strengthens me, I can accomplish all things, whatever. Philippians 4:13, I can't think of how it says. I said, first thing you got to do, Kate, I said, for it to mean more to you, look at where that came from. Where did Paul write that from? And so he goes back and he's looking at it, you know, he said, well, he wrote it for prison. I said, okay. I said, this guy says in prison that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I said, think about that. What have you faced that has been prison? What have you faced that has been torture? And this guy was looking for his reward. He was looking at the positive outcome of his decisions from there forward. He knew that even in being in prison, don't let it get you down. His outcome was going to be his reward in heaven. So what's, y'all got any verses? Anything that pops in your mind, you start thinking about positive outcomes, what the Bible says about it, positive consequences of your decisions?
You're talking about prison, like first chapter of James comes to mind, James 12, just the trials produce patience, and patience, and once patience is produced, lacking nothing will produce perfection. And it's just like, you get into like a trial or just a tough spot, and suddenly any idea of positive outcomes just go out the window in your mind. And you never actually think about what a difficult situation might result in. And then once you're out on the other side, you just find, oh, hey, this is a little convenient, but it's not because of this.
Trials produce patience, which produces perfection. Whenever I first became a supervisor at the post office, I was having a bad day, and it was a bad day. Everything was falling apart, and I was about to pull my hair out. I was like, man, I'm not cut out for this. I don't know. You know, everything is just going wrong. And my boss at the time, the postmaster here in Bowling Green, came up to me, and he goes, but he's a Navy guy. And I've explained a little bit of this. He's a Navy guy, and he comes up to me and goes, you know, you never know how good the captain is when the sea is smooth. He said, it takes a storm to see how good of a captain you are. And that's something that stuck with me the rest of my career so far is, you know, whenever something bad's going on, the Bible tells us, don't take that as a negative thing. Look at that and say, how can I come out on the other side? What can I do to get a positive outcome out of this situation? And he was right. You know, at the end of the day, we stuck with it. We put a plan together. It worked. Everybody went home, and everybody was safe. All the stuff got delivered. You know, and I looked back, and I said, you know what? It's the old chicken little syndrome. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. Maybe the sky ain't falling. Maybe you just need to find a different way. You know, this trial to put there in your way for you to figure out something, to grow as a human. You got to look for that positive outcome out of it. You know, in Proverbs, and you keep reading the rest of chapter 4 there, and it keeps talking about, you know, remember what I've told you, listen to what I've taught you, you know, reflect on my words. All of these things are there so that we can lean on them in a time of, you're not going to look at those times when you're making a decision of, what am I going to eat tonight? That's not what we're talking about. You know, those are the simple decisions. We'll get to that on the next two slides from here. You know, those types of decisions are not what we're talking about. We're talking about the decisions like, who are you going to marry? You know, where are you going to work at? What are you going to do with your spare time? Those are the type of decisions you need to look at and look for counsel on. All right. Anybody else got a Bible verse that comes to mind when you start thinking about positive consequences or rewards? All right. Negative consequences. I thought you was going to hit on this one. So maybe I don't go too far in James there. James is a great book. If you guys haven't studied James, if you don't read it enough to understand it, you need to. Negative consequences. First thing I thought of when I thought negative consequences was James chapter 1, verses 12 through 15. It says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Let no one say he is tempted. Okay, so the first one there, verse 12, are you talking about? That's the positive side of it, right? You know, you withstood the test, you're good to go, you've got the crown of life. Going from there forward, now you got to say, let no one say he is tempted. I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. The desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it's full grown, brings forth death. So much packed into those verses right there. What kind of death are we talking about, of course? Spiritual death. You know, I think we go back to the Adam and Eve syndrome on this one. You know, when we say, you know, start talking about the death thing, he made a bad decision, and he lived through it, and so therefore it must be okay, right? So-and-so acted this way, listened to this, drinks this, does this, and they're a Christian, and they're still alive, so maybe it's not as bad as they think. That's when you get yourself in trouble. This says, you know, our desires lead us away. When it's full grown, it grows into sin. First thing that came to mind when sin is born is Adam and Eve. Once again, that's when sin first entered the world, right? So the problem with it wasn't just the fact of they ate of the tree of life when they were told not to. It was all the other stuff that compounded it too. Adam, instead of just taking the blame for what he actually did, what did he do? He didn't take responsibility for it. He automatically pushed the blame off on somebody else. You know, he just kept compounding the sin when it came to this. Poor decision making all over the place when it came to Adam and Eve there in Genesis 3. The second part of it, when it says that sin is conceived, David and Bathsheba. I remember back whenever, I guess it was Curtis was here. He was up there preaching one night on David and Bathsheba. And this is back when David was running for office, David Lanfear. I don't remember when that was. That's been several years ago now. Cade was young, my son. And so we get home, and it's either that night or the next morning, Cade looks at Kim and he goes, "Did David really do that?" Kim said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "That thing with that woman, Bathsheba." "What do you mean?" She goes, he goes, "David Lanford, did he really do that with Bathsheba?" He thought, you know, literally that, you know, David had done this. But no, the problem with David and Bathsheba was the fact that he saw something he shouldn't have seen. Should have been enough right there. You know, I've heard people say it's not exactly what you see, it's how long you look. It's what you do with that information afterwards. We see that with David here. Was the problem that he saw Bathsheba on the roof? I mean, that could have been a simple, "Oh, man, I should have seen that. I'm going inside and I'm done." But no, he stayed. He stayed longer than he should have. And we, you know, Mark Pavey used to say it all the time, you know, sin will take you places you didn't want to go, keep you longer than you wanted to, and cost you more than you ever wanted to spend. I saw somebody else post that on Facebook this week. I was like, I think they know Mark Pavey. They know that saying. But, you know, David's problem was sin was conceived when he sat there and watched it. He took it a step further. He acted on those desires. And then again, sin produces death in Acts chapter 5. You know, what was the problem with what they did? It was their heart. Our negative consequences are going to come from our heart. Are we willing to accept responsibility for our temptations, our desires that lead us away? You know, when you go to make those decisions in life, what is your main purpose? When I don't know if y'all listened to Eric's sermon on Sunday. I sent Eric these slides last week to have him look at them. I said, "Eric, what do you think about this?" I think he stole all of my ideas. If you listen to his sermon on Sunday night, he was all over this stuff. So either he already had this planned out and I was, you know, piggybacking off of him. But, you know, and he's talking about, on Sunday night, he was talking about, you know, the temptations, the motivations, you know, his reasoning for coming here. You know, remember when he was talking about that? You know, what is your motivation for that? I talked a little bit about this last week, too. You know, I was thinking about becoming an air traffic controller. And I asked myself, I finally sat down, and this wasn't the first day of it, you know, it wasn't like I said, "Hey, I'm going to be an air traffic controller." And tomorrow I was like, "Oh, man, I don't think I want to be that today." No, this was after probably 6 months of online courses and studying and test taking and physicals and everything else. I finally sat down and asked myself, what is my motivation for this? I mean, have y'all had any decisions where you've had that choice? Where you've had to sit there and say, what is my motivation for this? Is it truly this? Is this what I want to do? Is this going to put me in a good spot, my family in a good spot? Or is the motivation money? What is, I heard a guy talking today in our office. He goes, "You know what they say about money? It's the root of all evil." Okay. I don't think it's money, though.
It's the love of money.
It's where is your heart? Is that what's motivating you to do something? If so, it's going to entice you to go into the wrong direction. You know, just that sin will produce death to you. If anybody else have any situation where your motivation has been questioned and you've realized you're doing the wrong thing? Like I said, that's the reason why I want to teach this class, is I've had those bad decisions. I've looked at it and said, you know what? I'm doing this for the wrong reason. Going back to John talking about, you know, you have those conversations, heated conversations with your spouse, and, you know, what is your motivation in the end? Is it to win the argument? Is your motivation to prove that you're the man of the house? Or is your motivation to do what God would have you to do when it talks about, you know, man is the head of the house, just like, you know, Christ is the head of the church? Where's your motivation at? When you make those decisions, you've got to ask yourself, what is my desired outcome in this? So whenever we see, you know, all right, I've got a job opportunity, wherever, what is my desired outcome from that? To provide for my family? Well, you can provide for your family working anywhere. You know, I told my wife before, I said, look, I mow grass and drive a bus. I could provide for my family doing that. You know, that's not a problem. I'd do that before I sold my soul and worked 19 hours a day. I mean, that's not worth it to miss out on your family. So what is your motivation? What I would ask myself in any of these decision-making. Because you don't want the negative side of that to be motivated by your selfish desires. Anybody else got anything on that?
I'll say motivations often, like, get reflected super easily, because I remember, like, in Boy Scouts and stuff, we had a bunch of leadership positions, and so you'd regularly see what these, like, 15-year-olds would do given a position of power. And it was all over the place because you would have some people purely do it because they want control and because they want to have pure power and all that that comes with. And then some people would do it because they actually cared about what was going on and they wanted to help everyone around them. And you saw how those two different leaders played out in those situations, and everyone always hated the power-hungry person, but everyone always adored the person who actually wanted to help.
And you will see that throughout your professional career also. Everywhere you work, you'll see that person whose motivation is to be the one on top. You know, to be the one making all the calls. And if you ever get into that position, you'll realize that's not always the most fun position. When you've got to make all those decisions, everybody looks to you and says, all right, well, what are we doing? Is there negative consequences to getting yourself in one of those situations? Yeah, because whenever you make a bad choice, guess what? Everybody blames you then. I found out that, you know, I've got 20 people that work for me, basically, about 20, and all of them are experts in every decision that needs to be made. And most of the time, they don't like the decisions that I make because it causes them to work harder, you know? But, you know, when you make those decisions, are you doing it for the right reason? You know, whenever I was choosing to be a supervisor, I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this or not. My motivation wasn't to be the one in charge. I knew that was the wrong decision to start with. My motivation was, this gives me more flexibility for time with my family. And over the years, that wasn't the case there for a while. But Kim and I knew at the time that, you know, hey, if you want to get to where you want to be at, you've got to go through some stuff. And so motivation was there to get to where I am now.
You know, the point to all this is, and we're all guys here, we can all talk. The point is, we don't want to suffer negative consequences from any decision we make, right? I don't want to suffer the consequences of it. Okay, so if I don't want to suffer the consequences, the negative consequences for the decision I'm about to make, what can I do? And you go right back to Proverbs, read the next verse after what John quoted a while ago, verse 5. The dad tells his son, get wisdom, get understanding. And I remember a preacher, and I think it was Curtis, that quoted this and said, where are you going to get that wisdom? Where are you going to get that understanding? Okay, as members of Christ's body, if I could go to one of my elders, as I get older, there's getting to be fewer and fewer people that are older than me, but if I can get to someone who I trust their judgment is a godly judgment, and they've been through exactly what I'm getting ready to go through, maybe they could tell me what the negative consequences of or about what I'm getting ready to do. And I go back to this young man at a church I used to be at. He was getting ready to move away from home for a job. He knew that I did the exact same thing, and he asked me, tell me the positives and negatives when you moved away from home. And I said, well, first of all, I looked at where I was going, and the first thing I looked at was, is there a sound, faithful church there that my family and I can be a part of? And he looked like he'd hit him with a 2x4. He said, I never thought of that.
That's the first thing that Dave Ramsey tells anybody when they call on his show. Not that I'm promoting Dave Ramsey, but that's the first thing he tells them on anything when they're considering it. And that's a massive, massive piece of the puzzle whenever you're going to move somewhere.
But flash forward, this young man moved to a city that did not have a faithful church. They joined themselves to a non-scriptural work. He and his wife are no longer members of the Lord's church.
Yeah, that's a major, major decision, part of the buzz, like I said, because it's, you know, we was out there in Missouri for 6 years, and I told you guys, I grew up in the Baptist church, so it wasn't a major decision to me. I was still... you know, love God and believe in going to church. We was going to church, you know, every day, just like everybody else, whatever. But Kim knew that in order for me to be what I needed to be, she needed to steer the ship in that. So going back to what John was saying earlier, you know, about sometimes you need to shut up and listen, I needed to shut up and listen, and it took me a long time to figure out what was going on there. 8 years. We were married for 8 years before I was baptized. And, you know, I remember we started going up over the bridge there, and we was home for a weekend. We started going up over the bridge on Campbell Lane, going over the railroad tracks, and we was discussing, you know, our difference in churches at the time. And I looked at her and I said, well, you've not even been baptized yet. And it hit her like a ton of bricks. We were already married, and she said, all right. You know what? She was baptized that weekend because it hit her that he's right, I'm not even in the right. So, you know, the decision making that we had at that point when we moved back here was to find a faithful church first thing. And once again, if we didn't do that, who knows what would have happened. So finding a faithful congregation wherever you're going is major. And not only that, you've got to be able to make sure there is one there to start with. When we was out there in Missouri, really wasn't. You would think, being in the Midwest, you'd still have, but it's not. You know, they had a couple of liberal churches, but that's about it. But going on with, you know, how do we find these answers? In Psalms chapter 4, I had this one on the previous slide, and I meant to say, read it. It's a short chapter. Whenever I was in basic training, I had one of those little Gideon Bibles. That's the New Testament. It's got Psalms in front of it. I'm going to tell you, if you ever have a situation where you need to be praying, it's a place like basic training. Every night I would pull out my little Bible and read something out of Psalms in there. And because things like, you know, chapter 4, answer me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. O men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? But know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. In peace I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. And when you see that, where do we need to turn for things to make sure we have the right decisions, the right outcome from these decisions? We turn to God. We need to pray to him and lean on him for all of our decisions that we're making. And I know that's, you know, you say, well, we're in a bubble crash. You're going to say that. Well, if you lean on worldly advice and you start watching the news, and I was watching some of the things today, you got professors at these major universities that can't even tell you what a woman is. They won't define a woman because they're afraid of what will happen if they define what a woman is. I mean, how far have we slipped? You know, you look back at what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, why did that place get destroyed? Why did they suffer negative consequences? Because they got so perverse and they were relying on whatever they wanted, which was their desires, to tell them what to do. And then what's happening to us today? It's a scary thought to see what's going on in the news today, to see what these liberal universities are teaching our kids. I say kids, it's you guys. You know, when you start looking at that, what kind of outcome could you possibly get from teaching us that we don't know what a woman is? Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox on that one. The last one I wanted to have a little bit of discussion on is this one, because when I got to reading it, I was like, I'd actually took the slide off twice before I put it back on there. Because I was reading it, I was like, I just don't know that I agree with what I'm saying here. But I put this up there for a reason. And even Eric said, I don't know, Joe. And I said, well, here's the reason why I want this up here. Are there neutral consequences for non-spiritual decisions? Now, this is supposed to be the thought-provoking one, guys, so y'all want to talk on this. We got a few minutes. For starters, I don't really agree with my question that I wrote up there, because there is nothing that is a non-spiritual decision, honestly. If you say, well, what about where to eat? Okay, let's say that I just eat whatever and say, well, it's not sinful for me to eat whatever. Okay, I get that, but what about gluttony? You know, what if my love for food causes me to be in a sinful situation later, as far as my health goes? What about purchases? What if you're spending all your money on things of the world instead of, you know, things that you should? You know, you had to be a good steward of your money. David teaches an excellent class on this about every 2 or 3 years about being a steward of your money, being having a stewardship over it. And, you know, purchases. Now, let's say you say, all right, I'm either going to purchase, you know, a sandwich or I'm going to purchase some spaghetti. Okay, I get it. That's not a spiritual decision. That could have a neutral consequence. You know, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. You're going to have a belly full. It doesn't really matter there. What about not making a decision at all?
That entirely depends on the situation. Because, I mean, not making a decision at all
is making a decision.
It is to a certain degree dependent on the situation. Because ultimately, I could look at someone from across the room and say, oh, should I tell them about Christ? I'm not going to make a decision on that. And then that is not telling them about Christ.
Turn over to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1, I ran across this verse several years ago, and I actually quoted it to a guy at work. It's probably been 15 years ago. I quoted this verse to him. He's like, how did I not ever know that was in there? And we had a discussion about this verse. So at the end of Romans chapter 1, he's gone through all these sins, right? You know, there's all these things that, you know, the haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. It's down in verse 31, 32. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die. All right, if you stop there, everybody's giving it amen, right? And by die, we of course mean spiritually. But if you stop there, everybody walks away happy. That's what the world does. Now, Cameron, finish the verse out for us there.
They not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them.
That right there should scare every single person in here to their soul. I mean, make you just shudder when you think about it. When you give approval to something, what does that say? And by giving approval, I mean, could that not be the, I'm not going to say anything? You know, if somebody's doing something wrong, if they're living in sin and you don't say anything, you may not be approving of it, but you're allowing it to happen. And as an elder, I'll tell you, that scares me because, you know, if I know that, you know, Ethan's doing something wrong, I'm responsible for him. In his soul, I better be willing to say something. I better be willing to step up.
But I think sometimes you also have to consider, like, I wouldn't go to a random person and talk to them unless, like, it was, like, a life-threatening thing. Sometimes the not making a decision is because you're postponing decision because you need more information for your decision. If you make a decision too rashly, then your neutral consequences turn into good or bad consequences. But if you postpone certain decisions until you have more information, then neutral consequences are just things are as they are, up or down, and more time passes along. When you come back to your decision again, you know, maybe things have changed, but you have more information, or at least you know more.
I gotta get you talking earlier in class. That's what I was trying to drag out with some discussion on this, and that's exactly right. You know, we don't want to be rash, and there's things like you said, you know, you see somebody random saying something or doing something, you're probably not going to go up to them and start a big argument. And that's, you know, I think you can go on, I forgot what verse it is now, you know, as much as it is possibly with you, live peaceably with everybody, basically. I can't remember what exactly how the verse goes, but, you know, if there's no reason to start a fight, don't start a fight. You know, there was last year during Teens in the Green, he led off with something. He said, guys, everybody lives by the comment section of social media nowadays. He said, have you ever changed anybody's mind by arguing with them in the comment section? And all these kids that were here in the Teens in the Green were like, no, I haven't. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the farmer's insurance guy. I've lived and learned from that lesson, too. I've had negative consequences of trying to argue with somebody in the comment section. And no, you're not going to fix it. So to your point, yeah, you have more information. You know exactly what you're arguing with. Everybody has a backbone when they're on social media, so that's something that I usually stay away from altogether. I tell my daughter all the time, don't even click on the comment section because your mind will be blown on the stupidity that's put out there. You know, some people just live and die to be able to comment on something and comment on it. But whenever I read that, you know, I see, you know, not only those that do it, but those that approve of it. And like you're saying, it doesn't have to be your approval. That's not what I'm talking about. Let's say something. Let's go big picture.